Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
My pleasure being here, and as a reminder to all our listeners, I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I give financial advice, but we do have an educational newsletter, which we publish on and off different, we used to call it Volume Reversal Survey, but it's VR Trader, 43 years.
Do we have a new special offer for our listeners?
We do. We changed the code, so it's 2022 half off versus 2021 half off. 2022 half off, you get 50% off any of the newsletters, which range from metals resource to cannabis to market timing. And we have, you know, various products, including our book is up on the website as well, though the offer doesn't apply to the book. You got to go to Amazon to buy the book, which is the it's called the Trader's Book of Volume, which covers all the major volume indicators. Great book. Took a lot of time, and it's very comprehensive if you're interested in technical analysis related to volume.
What caught your markets, or what caught your eye on this shortened market trading week?
There's so much going on, I don't even know where to get started, Jim, but we'll do our best in our short interview. First of all, because it was a short market week, there's a tendency, not often, but it does occur frequently, where we ahead of a market holiday, the markets tend to temporarily for a day or two reverse direction. So let's say markets are going down, then they rally like you saw yesterday on Wednesday, a little bit Thursday before it failed into the close. So you get a contra trend move, so to speak, ahead of holidays for whatever reason. So that's sort of not unusual phenomenon. So coming in on Tuesday and so forth, it sort of made sense to, if you were short the market, maybe you want to cover a little bit because you might get a bounce ahead of the holiday, which indeed did unfold. So that was sort of interesting this week. And April itself is, you know, historically a very negative month in terms of news. I know we talk about sell may go away coming up here shortly, but all kinds of interesting stuff. I mean, I have a long list and we don't have time to go over it, but for example, the start of the Revolutionary War here in the U.S. was April 19th, 1775. The Battle of San Jacinto and Texas Revolution was April 19th, 1836. The start of the Mexican-American War was April 25, 1846. The start of the Civil War was April 12th, 1861. I can go down this whole list, including the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was April 17th to 19th, 1961. So April is notorious, and I literally have 2 pages of this type of stuff. This is a very difficult month, you know, in terms of history and news, which crazy things happening. And of course, we've had the Ukrainian war start. That started in March, so it started a little early. So this time of year is plagued with, very unusual, events, political war events, and a treacherous time. So I would gotta be careful out there for a lot of other reasons. But meanwhile, you just got natural resources going up because of shortages. Crude oil doesn't want to stop going higher. Uranium is moving up, anticipation of more nuclear needs, you know, either for defense or just for energy with the EV boom down the road. Food inflation just soaring around the world. I think it was up about 12.5%, at a 12.5% monthly rate. So there's just a lot of this kind of stuff going on this week. And you know, basically, it's a time to be cautious, just in summary, in terms of what's going on out there. Apparently we're unintentionally or maybe intentionally into like a World War III. I mean, when I read the news, you know, Putin has been pretty clear about not other countries getting involved in this process. And I read earlier the U.S. wants to send more weapons over there and everybody's trying to support the Ukrainians. And I'm not going to take political sides here one way or another, but it's clear the more we get involved, the more risk that this thing could escalate. And this is probably what my charts are telling me, is that there's a lot more downside ahead here. And whether it's because of this event or because of some other outlier events, whether we want to talk about solar flares, solar events, or other crazy things, including volcanoes and all the fun stuff we talk about in this program, or just an acceleration of the current process, or China decides to really go into Taiwan, or Israel decides to bomb Iran. I mean, we're in this time frame, and there's a lot of, you know, reasons to be careful here. So, you know, precious metals is probably a decent hedge, along with commodities, including the oil, which doesn't want to stop rallying, at least for now, and the food ETFs related to soybeans and corn and general agriculture. Of course, there's been fertilizer shortages, as you know, in red because of the Ukrainian situation. So it's a good time to be short the market, honestly, and be long those sectors that are participating. Some include, of course, some of the defense stocks and so forth related to the war. But the bond market, you know, still is showing weakness as rates seem to be moving higher. There's some comment by one of the former Fed governors this past week, and I think it was Dudley. I think his name was Dudley. And he made some kind of crazy statement that, you know, essentially the Fed could possibly do whatever it could in terms of rates to knock the stock market down and punish investors, you know, with the thought that we got to punish investors and drag the stock market down into a, you know, severe correction, because this is what we really need to curb inflation. And this just reinforces, you know, my multi-decade view that the Federal Reserve needs to be abolished. There's no discussion about impeachment, by the way. We need to be talking about impeaching Biden, but there's very little discussion about that. So you're starting to hear some whispers of it. But the Federal Reserve itself is the problem. It's not inflation or lack of inflation. They created the problem. They act incorrectly along the way. They destroyed the U.S. dollar. And idiots like this coming out talking about we're going to try to get the stock market down, get investors so depressed, stock portfolios collapse. Hey, that's a great way to kill inflation. You know, let's do it that way. I mean, it's just idiots run by idiots, and it's just amazing that a statement like that would even be made, unless, of course, the Federal Reserve Board itself is short the stock market and long a lot of put options, and they want to make money on the crash, or their friends are, and that's why they would do something crazy like that. So the inflationary forces, you know, were in place anyway. The Fed kept rates low, what, since 2008-09 when we had the financial crisis. You're talking about a, you know, 15-year period where rates were really low, and suddenly they're going to destroy the market and destroy the economy for a mistake that, you know, they may or may not have made. And inflationary forces were building for a long time. The war, of course, had a lot to do with it. And, you know, the U.S. government position about, you know, curtailing the development of oil resources and so forth doesn't help the situation. So we've got the imbeciles managed by imbeciles and idiots that help create the problem, and then they want to do something stupid like possibly destroy the stock market, which is not going to solve the inflation problem. If, you know, if shortages exist in oil, if shortages exist in crops, and all these things, driving prices higher, you know, by raising rates and punishing the stock market is certainly not going to solve the problem. So this is, you know, the problem dealing with, government. And, again, I know it sounds totally outlandish, but, that book that was written years ago, The Creature from Jekyll Island, talking about the formation of the Federal Reserve and how it's owned by the member banks and how it's a separate private corporation, not part of the U.S. government directly, and on and on and on. You know, there's been more reasons. The way it was snuck in 1913 on a Christmas Eve evening, and it was passed and has caused more destruction. And in fact, Bernanke himself, I remember, had this quote in one of my presentations. It's going back several years. He actually said, regarding the Depression In the 1930s, he actually said, yes, we caused it. You know, he was pretty much admitting that the Federal Reserve itself, because it didn't act properly at that time, accentuated the problem. And I think it actually raised rates during that period of time for a short period. And he actually admitted in a presentation that the Federal Reserve was partially, if not totally, responsible for the depression. So, you know, again, I don't hear anybody on CNBC or Business News Network or CNN or anyone out there even making the statement that I'm making. You know, get rid of the damn institution. Andrew Jackson abolished the National Bank in the mid, it was 1838 or 1836, want to get rid of the damn thing, and we went ahead and created another one. So the problem is the Federal Reserve, really, and the central banks. What it really comes down to, Jim, free markets make the decision, not governments and not central banks. And I know we'll see it in my lifetime or not, but we need to get rid of the damn institution.
Friend of the show, Bob Hoy, a market historian, I think has pointed out that since the Federal Reserve was created, there have been 18 recessions or depressions. So obviously, even though they claim they were created to prevent those things, they clearly can't do the job.
Right.
And they just make things worse once there is a problem.
Right. And why it continues to exist.
They should fire themselves and give back their salaries, which are tax-free, apparently. Is yours? Is mine?
What are we going to do? We have to survive. We have to try to survive in this environment of nincompoops running the show. And I guess, you know, if you're trading the market and you can make money and you think that, you know, the world around you isn't going to collapse or they're not going to drop an atomic bomb or we're not going into a serious, like, World War III situation, and you think you're going to live through this, and you have some stored food in case food shortages become severe, then I guess you say, okay, I'm surviving. I got my food storaged away. I got some guns in the safe in case I need to protect myself. I'm short the market. My bank account looks like it's making some money, so I think I'm okay, unless, of course, the government comes in, which it could, digitize the currency, confiscate your money, and say, hey, like Klaus Schwab says in Germany, you don't own anything, but you're going to be happy, which is the world, the central world government proposal that he's touting, along with George Soros and other nincompoops out there. So, you know, you can try to isolate yourself, but I think, you know, someone's got to take the bull by the horns here and say, let's get rid of this institution among getting rid of a lot of other key players that are creating problems. Anyway, just, you know, a little bit of soapbox ranting here this afternoon for our listeners.
Well, in the Canadian budget, there's mention of creating a digital currency, and I haven't heard anybody but the shows on House Street mention these kind of things, and again, no commentary on it. And of course, we have a prime minister who has said publicly, I don't worry about monetary policy. Well, what the hell else is government? How much money do we have? How are we going to raise it? And where are we going to spend it? Isn't that monetary policy? And he's admitted he doesn't know anything about it.
That's right. Good. He deserves to be in office, certainly, right?
Well, he does have nice hair. We can always agree on that.
Well, I think it has to do with it's at fault with the people who elected him. There's an interesting story that came out this past week since you brought up the subject, Ripple technology, which is the XRP cryptocurrency, according to one article here, is it may be used by Canadian top banks, and it may be, you know, the actual story, I'm going to read some copy here. Crypto law founder John Deaton shares the news that Ripple's blockchain technology is now being used by Canada's top bank, CIBC, for cross-border payments. So we talk about Bitcoin, Ethereum, and so forth, but Ripple's XRP, even though it's down this past week, I think it dropped from 85 cents down to about 70 cents, apparently now being incorporated in the Canadian system. And many believe the XRP could be, you know, the next big Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever because of its practical use, as we're now seeing by the CIBC Bank. So just interesting stuff there. I wonder if Trudeau knows anything about that.
Well, he claims to know nothing about monetary policy, and he hasn't done anything to prove that he does.
But he may not even know that the CIBC Bank exists or Ripple or XRP is even a crypto, more than likely. But anyway, it's being employed.
Yeah.
We're getting off on a tangent a little bit.
Yeah, we are.
You brought up the currency, so digitizing of currency. So apparently it's starting already. And the question is, this is going to be used for good or bad purposes, hopefully for good.
Mm. Well, of course, in Europe, your cash withdrawals are already limited by government. I think it's about 750 euros, which would be about the same in U.S. dollars. And here, of course, if you try to take out a large amount of cash from a bank, they won't let you either. It's not an official policy. They don't actually have the cash on hand.
Well, it's been a war on cash going on for years, and part of it is that disclosure issue you just mentioned, where they have to disclose it or maybe outright prevent you from doing it. So they do want to get rid of it, and they want to digitize everything, and they want to know exactly what you're doing with your money every moment, and maybe ultimately confiscate it from you if Klaus Schwab's theory comes to pass. I mean, he was at Dead Devils talking, and there's these extreme viewpoints out there about how we should all be treated. You know, we're just a bunch of insects. We don't know what we're doing. We can't think right. But the smart people on top, like the Federal Reserve or Klaus Schwab, they know the answer. So we're going to have to succumb to their authority at some point. Hopefully not, but that's the talk that's out there. But meanwhile, that Ripple I just mentioned, the XRP, might be a viable crypto for those who want to take a look at it.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, the Baltic Dry Index, which measures the amount of goods moved around the world by ships, is down. And this is at a time when we have supply shortages, chip shortages for the auto industry, and a number of other things that we probably aren't even aware that have computer chips like your toaster. What does this say about the state of supply on our planet? Even though we're short of stuff, people aren't shipping anything. Is it a lack of product, a lack of demand, or are there still just so many tie-ups in places like China, we just can't get goods out and going?
You know, I wish I had the answer for you there, Jim. I read the stories. I'm scratching my head. Is it shortages of fuel for the ships? Is it intentional withholding of, docking permits? Is it all conspiracy theory about this? I mean, people make money, too. You know, when there's shortages, prices go up. People could be taken advantage of in terms of that. You know, maybe they figure they can make more money by squeezing people, by creating this or accentuating the shortages and not doing everything they need to get done. I mean, you can go through all these theories about why, but it's incredible what is going on. I wish I had the answer for you, but it doesn't seem to be slowing down very much. There seems to be a lot of shortages, though there's talk about it getting better. Of course, the war in Ukraine and all the commotion that's creating around the world is, you know, probably slowing things down as well. So, we need to do a little homework on, you know, the exact reasons for it, or is it a multiple reasons? And it doesn't seem to be slowing down very, very much. It seems, in fact, in some sense, getting worse, particularly when, you know, for example, fertilizer is not available and you can't grow crops and, you know, stuff like that. So we're just in this treacherous time. I've warned on the previous show that, you know, my models, you know, tell me this is not a good year to be, you know, unless you're in the right stock, the right sectors, if you're playing the right things that are moving, you know, there are some things, there's a bull market somewhere. You try to find where things are moving. You got to be in the right situations. But for the most part, it seems like there's going to be, you know, a bit more downside here to the overall markets, and that is the major equity markets because of these things that we're talking about.
Sure. If there's food shortages, maybe there'll be an uptick in the sale of can openers.
Well, you know, one particular stock that comes to mind, Costco, which is a big company. Despite all that's going on with other stocks, and this is just the retail stock, I mean, it's at all-time highs now. It's like $590 a share U.S. And when you go into Costco, there seems to be, you know, a little less of the food on the shelves than that normally is the case. And I'm looking at the stock going up, and I think the food problem, the shortages and stuff that we're talking about have filtered down a little bit down to the grocery shelves too. And then that may be one of the reasons Costco is doing well, is people are starting to stock up on stuff and their business is booming until, of course, the time comes they don't have stuff to put on the shelves anymore. But it's just interesting how that's playing out here. So, in fact, I'm going to be heading over there this afternoon and check things out again myself. But I don't know if you've noticed in Canada, but here in the U.S., I look around in stores, there seems to be less stuff on the shelves.
Yeah. An interesting note, Vancouver has the only Costco in the world that has regular consumer size items, not 8-gallon jars of pickles, but the average, you know, like 1 liter or 1 quart jar of pickles, because the people who live near that store live in tiny little apartments. They have no place to put that giant jar.
I like that.
Yeah. Mark, there's chat here that Elon Musk, who has been banned from Twitter several times, instead of just being a 9 or 10% shareholder in it, he's now talking about buying it outright for 48, 50, is it 100 million or just million? I know numbers like that to him seem to be nothing.
I think it's about 800 was it 80 billion or some number to that effect?
Yeah.
I have to pull up notes here. Right. And it comes out of his own pocket, apparently, but he's worth, what, 250 billion or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, a terrific story, by the way, and it probably will happen. Of course, I'm very sympathetic to the fact that he's trying to improve the freedom of the press here, which has obviously bothered him to a great degree, and you know, big supporter of that theory. But the fact that he's criticized for it, people are skeptical. I mean, they've been skeptical of Elon Musk since he launched Tesla. I mean, when the stock was $32 a share, you know, as you went 100 times higher than that. But, you know, the bottom line is I'm a big supporter of his. He probably will succeed at it. I don't know if he'll pay the $54 a share that he says was his top price, which he talked about today, Thursday, or whether he'll go higher or it'll bring in competing bids from other people. But the fact he wants to control and open up the censorship, which apparently has been occurring all over, whether it's Facebook, you know, or Google and all other platforms, but to open up Twitter, I think is just fantastic. It was a pet peeve of his, and he wanted to solve it. And the fact he's trying to put his money on the line to help change the complexion of, you know, freedom of speech, I think is just fabulous. So the man is just remarkable. You know, he's going to have the operations on Mars. He's got the SpaceX satellite floating around the planet, improving internet. He's got the Tesla. He launched the entire EV movement. And he has hundreds of other projects underway. The Boring Company, for example. He's got so many things. The man is literally the Edison of our time. And I've said this over and over again. I would not bet against him. And I'm sure he'll succeed in cleaning up Twitter, whether he ends up ultimately owning it, controlling it, taking it private, or whether he just influences them by being ultimately a board member, though he decided not to do that now because he wanted to continue to accumulate shares, apparently. But fantastic story today. It lit up the boards all over the place. The analysts on all the major networks couldn't stop talking about what Elon Musk is doing. Just fabulous story, and it's all for the good.
Mark, anything else we should be keeping a real close eye on?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I'm sort of looking at my notes here. You know, we covered all the high points. So I think the main thing is the old expression, sell may go away. We're in this time frame. Markets tend to be weak. Try to focus on what's moving. We covered that earlier in the interview. And I'd be a bit cautious here. And, of course, we have the midterm elections coming up here in the U.S. later in the year. Whether they'll try to rally it into that point of time from some low that'll probably form here in the next couple, 3 months, time will tell. But at the moment, I'm assuming, except for these sectors that we've described and things that you can trade off that benefit from the crises around the world, we're in a bear market.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or any of our other guests, we'll be glad to pass those questions along and we'll ask them for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.